So I was 14 years old when I drove my first car. It actually wasn't a car, it was a truck. I was a summer camp counselor. And I was at this camp out in the middle of nowhere near Madison County, Virginia. And I'll never forget, there was these supplies that needed to be moved from the bottom of this hill about a half mile up the hill. And the owner of the camp looks at me and he gives me the keys to the truck. And he says, "Hey, can you drive these up there?" And I looked at him as only any kid that gets every dream they've ever wanted in their lives can look at him and said, "Absolutely." So I go to get in the truck and I'm going to drive the supplies, and three other counselors who are about my age hop in the back of the truck. Because that's a really smart thing to do. I mean, you're seeing all of the intelligent activity here. So I start driving, and I'm driving really carefully because I have to go up this hill pretty far. And I'm driving the truck, and I'm going really slowly, and the guys are in the back of the truck just beating on the glass. Like, "Come on, faster, faster." So I put it on a little bit. You know that thing when you first learn to drive, and they're shaking a little bit back there. They fall in the back of the truck. "Get back up, hit on the glass again, faster." And I get to going so fast. Mind you, there are campers everywhere all over the camp. I mean, everything about this was so stupid. And I'm driving, and I'm going faster and faster. And we go around this curve, and the truck literally goes up on two wheels, one side. It throws the guys in the back all to one side of the truck. And then all of a sudden, everything just comes to a halt, a screeching stop. I was terrified. It was my first reckless driving experience. I was 14 years old, and I did not touch a car or a vehicle for two more years. I would not do it. When it was permit time, I was like, "I can wait. It's all right." And when I first got in a car with my mom to drive with my permit, I remember anything over about 20 miles an hour felt insane to me. So mom would be like, "Son, you can go the speed limit." And we would drive through town. Driving through town was a terrifying thing to me because I was so afraid I'd hit another car that I would hug the cars on the side of the road, driving 20 miles an hour down the road. What I had done was I had swung the pendulum to the other side. I had gone from this reckless 14-year-old experienced driver to driving and barely wanting to ever get behind the wheel of a car. I had moved from giving everything I had to touching the gas to stopping and pausing. Now, the long story is, at some point in time, I learned how to drive. Susan may not agree with that, but I think I drive pretty well. She lets me do it sometimes. Maybe that wasn't in there. All right, we're starting a new sermon series today. The sermon series is called Reckless Love. The books are on the back table. I do hope that you'll pick one up. And we're doing it for the next 6 weeks during a season the church calls Lent, which is a really fancy way of saying a season to stop and pause and to focus on God. The season leading up to Easter, where we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, and we'll get the death in there before that as well. But a time to pause and be still and focus on Jesus. During these 6 weeks, we're also doing a life group study that I mentioned in conjunction with the sermon, in conjunction with this idea called reckless love. Now, we're going to go during this series, I said last week, back to the very basics of what Jesus said. And how do I know what they are about loving God and loving neighbor? I'm going to take you to Mark chapter 12 this morning. In Mark chapter 12, starting at verse 28. It says, "One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating." This is the Pharisees and the other religious leaders, and everybody's debating about all the different things. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, and he being the teacher of the law, said, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." "Well said, teacher," the man replied. "You're right in saying that God is one and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he had answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions. So I want to paint the picture for you a little bit. A teacher comes to Jesus. This is likely a rabbi, someone who's teaching students, and he comes to Jesus because he respects what Jesus might say. He is not coming, I don't think, to challenge Jesus, because he heard all the debating, and he's coming to say, what's the deal? Because there were over 600 laws that they would have had to teach. Part of me believes that this guy is like, all right, I've got to create a test for my students on the laws, and I'd rather not make it 50 pages, right? I want to make it short. If I ask, what's the one thing? Or perhaps he's trying to take a syllabus and bring it down a little bit because he doesn't have enough weeks to talk about all 600 of them. But he goes to Jesus and he says, I want the one important thing, the most important thing. Friends, the teacher knows the law. He knows what would have been taught. That's what he studied. That's what was so important. But he wants Jesus's take. What's the most important one? And Jesus answers very quickly. You notice there's no pause in the text. It doesn't say, and then Jesus thought about it for a while. It says, Jesus says this, the most important one, answered Jesus, is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. Now, those that were standing around, those that had been debating, they would have liked this answer. They would have said, that's what we learned when we studied the law in Deuteronomy. This is called the Shema, right? Understand, God is one, and you're supposed to love God with all of who you are. They would have loved this because a lot of the other religious traditions that were going on in the time worshipped many different gods. And it was an important thing to the Jewish leaders that people understand there is only one God. So this was a really, really big deal. And they would have all been going, yes, Jesus, that's correct. He finally got something right. Right? We'll agree with him. We've been debating with him. And I imagine what would have happened was the teacher would have heard that and then said, okay, I got my answer. I'm about to walk off, as would the religious leaders have. But Jesus throws something which I think is much harder. He says, the second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Is that a grammatical problem right there? There is no commandment greater than these. So Jesus gets a little more tricky here. It's not just the law as you know it. Love God with all of who you are. Jesus says, love your neighbor. And I can imagine them going, okay, I get it. Love God. This is clear. But my neighbor, how do I know who my neighbor is? How do I do that? I'm sure anyone else is listening might have thought that, but not the teacher. Look at what the teacher says. Again, you notice it doesn't say, and the teacher walked off and pontificated for a moment. He thought, the teacher says, well said, teacher. You are right in saying that God is one and there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices. The Pharisees would have hated this. They would have hated this answer that he's going, you're telling me that that's better than all the other laws we're trying to teach them? Better than everything else we're trying to push, and better than the things we're saying, these are the things that make you in and these are the things that keep you out. How dare he say that, and how dare the teacher say it? But friends, the teacher gets it. I think the teacher understands that loving your neighbor completes the ultimate task that God gives us for being here on earth. Used to be that I misunderstood this. I really did. It used to be that I thought that what we had to do was we had to figure out how to love God with all of who we were, with every ounce of who we were, and then maybe we could come to understand how to love our neighbor. So we had to become essentially these perfect people that loved God and everything, and then maybe, just maybe, we could love other people. But the challenge that I had with that was I saw people who didn't even know God loving people really well. I saw people who had no relationship with God, no understanding of who God was, going out and loving their neighbor a lot better than I saw a lot of people inside the church loving their neighbor. And I came to struggle with this concept. And I remember sitting down one day in a coffee house with Amy, our old worship leader, and she's talking about something. I honestly don't remember what it was. And I, in my normal way, in my a bit of ADHD that I sometimes live in, I said, hey, stop. I think I've had it all wrong. I actually think that sometimes we have to learn to love our neighbor before we can love God with all of who we are. I think that we have to become people who understand love for one another before we can understand love for God. I think that sometimes it takes people loving us before we can have even a desire or a heart to love God. Now, the longer and the deeper that I've gotten into these things, the more I've come to understand that these actually go together. And actually, it wasn't until I read it this morning when the scripture says, there is no commandment greater than these. You notice Jesus just puts them together. He says the first and the second, but then he says there is no commandment greater than these. They live in conjunction with one another. We are encouraged to love God, yes, with all of who we are, but we are also encouraged to love our neighbor as ourselves. So in the beginning of this series, I want to start as simple as Jesus starts. I want to say, begin with love. That's the place where Jesus is. It's the place that he puts so much emphasis. It seems like such a simple thing, but friends, we mess up so often. Why does this happen? I believe the problem is that we actually conceptually like the idea of love, but we don't practically like it. Conceptually, it's a really good thing, right? Love everyone. As a concept, that seems really easy. But when we get down into it, does that include the neighbor across the street who leaves their trash out too long? Does it include your family member who is from a different political party than you are? Does it include your ex-spouse? Does it include the people that actually live right next door to you that you've never met because they look, talk, or act differently than you? I mean, Jesus says, love your neighbor. Conceptually, that's a really good concept, but who was Jesus actually talking about? Surely he wasn't talking about people that we don't connect with, people that we don't like, people who are different from us. I mean, could that be true? Is that even possible? I mean, you hear me say this and you say, Tim, you sound ridiculous. Of course, that's who Jesus was talking about. But is that practically what love looks like in our lives? Does love look like going beyond our current circles, places where we're comfortable, and actually stepping out and loving people who are different from us? See, friends, I think that's actually where we have to decide if we believe in love conceptually or practically. If we think about the people we love and they're only people that agree with us, if they're only people that act like us, if they're only people that do the things that we do, if they're only people we like, because you notice Jesus doesn't say you have to like people. If love is only comfortable, it's a conceptual idea. It's not a practical idea. It was last year, almost this time, that I was in Honduras. I was working with some young women at a school called the Leadership Center. It's a graduate program from high school where these young women go in Honduras and they go to learn English and they go to learn business skills and just basic life skills. Because in Honduras, women in leadership is not a thing. So these young women are going and they're learning. And most of the classes are taught by international folks who come and teach to the students. The human rights course was taught by a young French teacher, Ariel, who I had never really met. I hadn't had much conversation with her, but I'm about to go for a run one morning, and Ariel comes to me and she says, hey, I'd love for you to teach my human rights class today. And this is at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm going for this run. And I said, what time is your class? She said, 10. And I said, well, what's it on? Like, I don't have time to prepare. She said, I want you to teach a human rights class on homosexuality. And I was like, you want me to a bunch of Honduran women in a place where homosexuality is outlawed to talk to them about human rights? And she looked at me, honestly, she looked at me like I did when I got the keys to the truck, and she's like, yeah. And I had no time to prepare. I could have not gone on my run, but I said, I'll just wing it, right? That's a really smart thing to do, to lecture for an hour and wing it. You should never wing it, by the way. No, but I showed up to the class. And they're, by the way, they are part of a Christian school. So I started with this greatest commandment. That was the place where I began. And I said, what is the greatest commandment that God gives us? And they, in English, love God with all of who you are and love your neighbor as yourself. And I said, Ariel has asked me today if I will talk about homosexuality, and you could see instantly sort of the chairs back up in the room. What are we going to talk about? And I said, I'm not here to try to convince you of anything today. I promise you of that. That's not my job. My job is simply to talk to you about the greatest commandment and what we do with that as people. And we're going through the talk, and I said, do you believe people are made in the image of God? And they all said yes. So we got through that in the image of God. And then we got to talking about neighbors. And I said, if you had a neighbor who was gay, how would you love them? And they said, one woman, I'll not joke, raised her hand, and she said, I would love them by ignoring them. The best way that I could love them is by staying away from them. And friends, that was a very powerful word that hit me, not because of the topic and not because of who she was, but I thought about it. How many people do I love by ignoring them? How is my conscience really good because I say, I'll love from afar. I just won't interact. And that's the best way for me to love people. Jesus didn't love anyone from afar. Did you notice that? In fact, the people who were afar, Jesus went to them and brought them into the conversation. Loving our neighbor is easier when our neighbor is like us. Loving our neighbor is easier when our neighbors have kids that are our kids' age and we can play together. Loving our neighbor is easier when they cook the same meals we cook and we can just say, come over and throw your burgers on the barbecue with ours. Loving your neighbor is easier when they agree with you politically. But that's not what Jesus calls us to. Jesus never says, love your neighbor, and that's going to be real easy. Jesus never says, love the neighbor that makes you comfortable. See, friends, I think when Jesus drops this line about beginning with love, theoretically, it's a really nice idea. Right? There's a whole holiday around it, right, in February. Love people. But I don't think Jesus is talking about a holiday. I think Jesus is talking about the depths of relationships that we have with people. Tom says in his book, and I want to read this quote, he says, love is not a principle in which we believe. It's not an aspiration we hope to attain. It's an orientation that sets the course of our daily words and actions. Love is the filter through which we interact. Love is the filter of life. Love is the first thing we put on in the morning. And friends, if that is true, it changes absolutely every interaction we have. It changes the interactions and the ways that we interact with friends and family. It changes the way that I talk with my kids when they leave their shoes all around the house. It changes the way that I talk to my wife when she drinks the end of the iced tea. Right? It changes the way I drive. And it changes the way I interact with the person who cuts me off on the street. It changes the way that I interact with the coworker that I simply don't like. It changes everything. It absolutely transforms things. Friends, it changes how we welcome people when they come into the church. We don't welcome people that think and act like us. We welcome all people with the reckless love of Jesus Christ. And I'm not talking about reckless like I was in my earlier story when I was driving. But I actually believe that the way I came to drive 2 years later was more like the way that we actually interact with love in most of our life. We're too cautious. We're too comfortable. We don't want to take it too fast because we're afraid that we might get hurt in loving someone. And we put up barriers and boundaries and we hug the side rail the whole way to stay away from the other car that's coming. We spend a lot of our lives loving away from people. Jesus doesn't call us to love away from people. Jesus calls us to love recklessly. Jesus loved without abandon. He loved all people. He loved people on the fringes, gave them an opportunity for great welcome into that love. Over the next few weeks, we're going to go deeper and deeper into this. Today, I want to encourage us to start with love. On your seats, there's a heart, hopefully. And I want to ask you, if you're willing, over the next 6 weeks, to simply try on this love thing, not conceptually, but practically, I want you to just write your name or your initials on the heart. If you come to receive communion today, or even if you don't, there'll be a basket here in the front and a basket in the back, and eventually these hearts will be all over these trees up here. And I want to encourage you to actually take it on. Don't just write it on a piece of paper. If you're just going to write it on a piece of paper and not love people over the next 6 weeks, just save the heart. But if you're actually going to step out and love people, if you're actually going to step out beyond yourself, I want to encourage you to write your name or your initials, whatever you're comfortable. Nobody's going to read them and nobody's going to look at them. But write it on there. When the teacher responded back to Jesus, I imagine Jesus just smiled. The teacher didn't run off, but he responded. And the reason that I imagine that is because of the way Jesus answered. Jesus responded with this: "You are not far from the kingdom of God." And friends, that's just a fancy way of saying, you get it. You understand it. And you're going to live a life that ushers in this kingdom of God, this concept. Friends, I want to help usher in that world. I imagine that you do as well. So love. Love practically. Love all people. Love intentionally. And love recklessly.